Yo, G, they can't stop me from rapping, can they? Can they hop? I spit it through the wire, man. Too much stuff on my heart right now, man. I gladly risk it all right now. It's a life or death situation, man. Y'all don't really understand how I feel right now, man. It's your boy Kanye Titter. Chi-Town, what's going on?
Chi-Town's in the house. Welcome to Thank You Rob podcast number 6. Yeah. Through the wire. Yeah.
Through the wire.
Yeah. I'm here with my special guest Fingas.
Hey.
How's it going?
Great.
I'm going to stop doing that now. That's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
Could you imagine your
talking through the wire like that?
That'd be tough to do.
Are there pictures of him like that?
I think there's got to be.
Yeah.
There's got to be. Well, welcome to episode number 6, unofficially sponsored by Pearson Salted Nut Roll.
Don't be a butthole.
Eat a Pearson Salted Nut Roll. Nice. Good.
I've been
job.
Practicing. I was Have practicing. Yeah. I would cue up the old episodes and try to get your timing just, right. You know, like right with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to change it up then. Last week I had Egypto Knuckles on. We tried to go in sync with that.
Yeah.
He needs some work. He needs some work. Love the guy.
Yeah.
He's got to brush up on what would you call it? My catchphrase.
Your catchphrase. Yeah. Well, I would call it your subtle pitch for sponsorship.
There you go. It is unofficial.
Yeah.
Maybe someday.
Someday.
Someday. That's the plan.
Have you reached out to them?
No. Not yet. I got to get at least 10 episodes under my belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been eating Pearson Salt and Nut Roll since...
forever.
Yeah, as far back as I can remember, but, you know, anyone can walk up and say that, you know.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
But today, Fingas of Common Labor, Background Noise Crew.
Yes. Happy. Thanks for coming here to do
it. Yes, we're on the road today. We're on the road.
Touring.
I haven't done this since episode number 1 when I interviewed Johnny Question Mark. So last week we talked about Rage Against the Machine, self-titled album. Actually, we kind of covered a few, you know.
The problem with talking with Egypto about anything music-related is in no way will you ever talk about just... The one CD or album that you're trying to talk about, because he is very deep in the crates, deep in the music catalog.
We'll talk, and he will be digging.
He'll
be
literally,
digging in his mind. He's like, "What else?
What else can I pull out? Yeah, that's a little nugget. Yeah, this little truth. Oh, did you know? Fun facts.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
as I come in here, Fingas here has some vinyl albums that are encased.
Yes.
And it looks like they're time capsules.
Yeah.
Someday you're going to probably bury these and just wait for someone in the future to dig them up.
To dig them right up.
Yeah.
Yep.
But one of them is Rage Against the Machine. The album.
The one. And so, also, another fun fact, for Christmas, Egypto Knuckles got me the special edition picture vinyl of that same record.
Nice.
It's not up there. It's actually upstairs by our record player.
In another time capsule?
In another time capsule, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I see you've also got Blueprints, 1988.
Yep.
It looks to be a Tool album, right?
Is that what it is? Lateralis. Okay. Yep.
And that's
the double
the
LP.
Okay.
Yep.
And then Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
And that's actually a French import of it.
Ah, oui.
Oui, oui. Where it's all in French, yes. It's absolutely all in French.
I don't even know how to say that in French. What I got, you got to get it, put it in you.
In French. Oui.
Oui. Oui. And then you got an Aesop Rock 45 there?
That's a special 45. You had to go see him on tour to get it or buy it off of eBay.
Okay.
It's with Jeremy Fish, did all the artwork, and it's a storybook about the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
And
so there's pictures.
Yeah. The whole booklet is like a turning page, and actually the first song called The Next Best Thing is sort of Aesop's lament on the creative process, but there's actually chimes, and you're supposed to turn the page when you're a child. It
that's
cues
awesome.
You to turn the page in the book.
You know what? He's definitely someone I've learned to really appreciate music-wise. I mean, he did I think it's for Nike Plus.
That 45-minute
just workout deal.
Workout thing.
I actually should probably check that out. But
yeah.
So did that guy, I don't know the artist you said.
Jeremy Fish, he did the cover for None Shall Pass.
Okay, I was going to say,
It looks like his art, and which is what it is. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
But we are here today, first and foremost, to discuss some things.
Yes.
Our first subject would be Kanye West, the college dropout.
Yeah, Yayo.
Which is it's a classic, I got to say, in my book. Now, let me preface with this with, is Kanye a douchebag? Let me ask you that.
Well, okay. I think you have to divide the ego into two halves. Mm-hmm. Because to me, what makes Kanye such a magnet of energy, of publicity, of music, is his ability to exist in this counteractive, completely yin and yang world. He will make a song talking about how he doesn't want to be materialistic, mm-hmm. and he wants to throw all that away, and he wants to pray to God and be some sort of, like, I don't know, it's very like spiritual and let's go.
Right.
In the same verse, he will talk about his Louis Vuitton purses and shirts, and I don't even know. I'm not into clothes and stuff. Right. But yeah, so yeah. In one sentence, he will embody, to me, what many people deal with in their own psyche, is that drive to be successful and powerful and amazing and be what everybody wants, mm-hmm. where at the same time, he just wants to, like, be happy and not do any of that.
Right, right.
But he embodies both of them, and the beauty is that he freely shares it with the world. So sometimes it comes out very wrong,
right.
where I think he means well for the most part, but I think everybody has those douchebag moments. It's just mm-hmm. that yours is not publicized on television. Mm-hmm. His, he doesn't have a filter, and he is right. that all the time. So, now, like the Taylor Swift incident and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. You know what's funny is a buddy of mine, I do this other podcast called Some People's Kids podcast.
Yes.
Now, we haven't done it since like early December, so I shouldn't say that we do this other one. We did this other one.
We have done.
We do more, but yeah. It's my buddy Chuck. And he on Facebook posts many funny things, which I find hilarious. But I'm his friend, so you know. Usually,
it's like feeding the beast,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he made this post about how you know Kanye came on stage during Taylor Swift's acceptance.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what did he say? He's like, you know, I'm sorry, but you know.
I believe the phrase that again was spread all over the internet was, "Yo, dog. I'm going to let you finish."
That's right. That's exactly what it was. So he made this post about, so now Kim Kardashian and Kanye are dating and she's pregnant. So
yes.
Let's say she's about to birth this baby. Taylor Swift comes into the delivery room and is like, "Yo, Kim, I'm going to let you finish," you know, and goes into this whole spiel. I thought that was a great analogy.
It's,
you know,
awesome.
Just how maybe life could come full circle if
right.
that were to happen.
If that could just turn the tables and then Kanye could get a taste of his own medicine. Now, the Taylor Swift incident, mm-hmm. I don't know. Did it hurt her career?
Not at all.
I don't think so.
If
I think
anything, it helped.
Benefited her career. Yeah. So that's a plus.
Yeah.
Now, was it embarrassing? Probably.
Yeah.
What she has to remember, though, and I don't listen to a lot of Taylor Swift. I do not hate on her, though. Mm-hmm. I will give her respect. I do know she writes and plays guitar.
Okay.
And she writes most of her own material.
Okay. I did not know that.
So I'll give her that. And that's pretty cool. But again, she has to look at it from the flip side. She was receiving an award and a douchebag jumped on stage and basically like looked like a fool.
Right.
So if anything, she should feel, wow, that guy's a tool.
Right.
Like, she shouldn't really feel, I don't think she should feel as embarrassed if she does still, or if she ever did, really. But I'm sure in the moment, the emotions were a lot different.
Yeah.
Now, back to the question, is Kanye a douchebag? Yes, I do think he's a douchebag.
Right.
But I think he's also just an eclectic, ecstatic being. And you can't expect people like that, especially, I mean, he's at a level that other people probably couldn't even imagine with popular culture, and I mean, you know, he goes anywhere in the world, people recognize who he mm-hmm. is. It's just part of what he is now.
Almost Michael Jackson status.
Yeah.
Almost.
So, I mean, when you reach that level, I can almost understand how you would probably be a little erratic mm-hmm. and a little crazy. And again, power drives people to do weird things. So if you literally can't do any wrong, what would stop you from opening your mouth and saying something stupid?
Right.
Yeah. Nothing.
Any publicity, bad publicity is good publicity.
Right. So now he's just feeding his own machine, essentially. Right. So,
yeah.
Because people are now, we're having this conversation about Kanye West. Yep. Had he been peaceful.
Years later.
Had he been peaceful and said nothing.
Right.
Maybe we just remembered him as a fairly good producer and a subpar rapper.
Right, right. People that are really good at what they do kind of lack in other. It's hard to be like really good at everything, every single thing you do.
Yes.
You're going to, if you're really good at certain things, there's going to be like social skills that you might lack.
Lack. Absolutely.
And I think that's his.
Meet any extreme computer genius.
Right.
Guys that just look at code and it looks like English to them. Mm-hmm. They can tell you exactly what's happening in this ridiculously complicated, compounded code. And like, oh yeah, that's just doing that and that and that. But then when you try to have a beer with them, you can't even have a conversation because they've spent their entire life reading code, so they don't know how to read people's faces.
You
could
be in mid-conversation and they're like, I got it.
Yeah.
I just figured it out. I got to go.
You know? You're like, okay, cool. See ya.
So back to the college dropout.
College dropout.
Yeah. First, I wanted to note, if you've heard the album, which I'm sure most people have.
At this point, it would be surprising if you haven't.
Right. I think it's a great album. There's these skits on there. There's a guy that I always, for the longest time, thought was Bernie Mac. It sounds just like Bernie Mac.
you doing, kids? Yeah, yeah. Or that guy.
It's something beautiful.
Yeah.
Or something like
something
that.
Something for the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just made sense to me because Bernie Mac is from Chicago. Kanye is from Chicago. I was like, oh, that's cool.
That's you know? Who you would logically think it
right.
would be.
It's not. It's a comedian named DeRay or DeRay Davis.
DeRay Davis.
Yeah, which apparently he's done a lot of work. Been in a few movies.
Oh. Where are you pulling your information?
Oh, from my head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just know these things.
Perfect.
Not Wikipedia.
Nope, that's good.
Nope.
Nope. I don't use
Wikipedia. Not the internet.
I don't use Wikipedia either.
Good.
Yeah.
But the album was released February 10th of 2004. Took over 4 years to record. And I think I probably heard it slow jams. Slow
with
jams.
Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, with Jamie Foxx and Twista.
Yep.
That was I think I'd heard Through the Wire because I think that was probably the first single.
You got me on this. But
Slow Jams was like the first big song that I'd heard. And I was like, Jamie Foxx, the fucking singer?
What?
Wow, and he's good.
Yeah.
And I heard that and I was like, you know what? This is not a bad song because it was 2004. I went through a period in my life where I was listening to a lot of NSYNC Clown Posse. I'm not very proud to admit that, but it was part of my life, so I can't deny it. And
right.
Because of that, I closed the door to a lot of other music. And yeah, I mean, this to me is very good rap music, you know?
Yeah.
And so actually, because I had that door closed, I never got into Jay-Z.
Oh,
this
okay.
album got me into Jay-Z, you know, thankfully. Yeah.
Would this be like your gateway album, kind of, or one of them?
One of them,
I should say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sucks because I know had I been listening to Jay-Z since the get-go, maybe my life would have went different ways. But whatever, you can't.
We can't ponder these things.
You can't change the past. But how about you? When did you hear the album? When did you get into this?
Well, so my forays into the hip-hop world are actually very short. In my span of life and my span of music, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah,
mm-hmm.
and joked that I was friends with the only black kid in the state.
Okay.
So, needless to say, most hip-hop culture didn't translate into the Salt Lake City landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And if it did, it translated awkwardly or inappropriately or in a way that wasn't reflective of what was happening with the music or the culture or the movement. And more importantly, I played bass in a rock band and I didn't really care for hip hop.
Right.
So all through my high school career, and it came out in 2004, so I would have been a freshman in college.
Mm-hmm.
I did not care about hip hop like in the slightest. Mm-hmm. So on its release, if you would ask me who Kanye West was, I couldn't even tell you.
Right.
Even if you asked me who Jay-Z was, maybe I would have known who he was, but I wouldn't be able to tell you anything about him.
Right.
So I didn't get into College Dropout until I would say maybe 2006,
okay,
2005, like mm-hmm. well after the explosion.
Okay.
The point is, I actually was introduced to Kanye by late registration.
Okay.
And then I went backwards and got the College Dropout.
Right.
Some parties I'd been to, I'd heard All Falls Down, and maybe a couple other things, but I didn't register like, oh, this is Kanye. Mm-hmm. And then the one I actually heard was Drive Slow from Off Late Registration. And I was like, I really like this beat. Yep. Bump. Don't. It's just really just simple. To me, it embodies what like hip hop, like at its core is. When I got the College Dropout, I started kind of looking at it and listening to it because I had no idea Kanye had this entire discography of production work. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know he was famous for his production already.
Right.
I never heard H to the Izzo mm-hmm. or like any of his other anything else he's ever produced.
Right.
So this was my introduction to Kanye. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know. I've heard theories where he doesn't write some of his stuff, but then he does write some of his stuff. And that's always a gray area mm-hmm. in the world of hip hop. Like right. if somebody's ghostwriting for somebody,
unless
or,
you're Jay-Z writing for Dr. Dre, then people know.
Then people know.
Yeah.
So like things like that. But if he does write some of it, I did like his that embodiment of these completely contradicting areas.
Right.
Like at the same time, like mm-hmm. All Falls Down. I was really like, oh, okay, so he's talking about this single mom who wants like Jordans and stuff, but she's got a kid, so she has to balance these things. And I'm like, that's a real world problem. That's very real. And then he goes on to talk about his own bragging and things like that. And so it's just very contradicting to mm-hmm. hear it all at once. But production wise, up until that point, I was really, I only got turned on to hip hop actually because of like Minnesota hip hop, because I didn't really like mainstream hip hop. I didn't really like stuff that was getting played on the radio.
Right.
But then here he is, he's got like violin samples in that mm-hmm. workout plan, which is a hilarious song
right.
with a great metaphor and like premise all wrapped into one, and that was really clever. I thought I can remember early Background Noise crew meetings where I was like, dude, Kanye's good, and mm-hmm. some members of the crew were like, no, he's not. They'll remain nameless, but
okay.
I was definitely into it.
I didn't know that he won Best Rap Album 2005. He won a Grammy
for
that.
A Grammy, yeah.
Yeah,
which I also thought was weird because there's that song like Last Call where he's like talking about his success. And I never understood that, how he would already be talking about his success even though he wasn't a success yet. But then I didn't realize he had previous Grammys
right.
for
okay.
his other production.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's kind of, on that note, Kid Rock. Are you familiar with Kid Rock's Devil Without a Cause? That's what it is.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going platinum. You know, it's like, how do you know that already? You know?
Right, right.
And he did, you know? What the hell?
Weird.
What the hell, Kid Rock?
How do you do that? Are you? What's that famous prophet? Edgar Cayce.
I don't know who that is.
Okay. Name drop. What's up?
So, just a little background about our boy Kanye. A little background on Yeezy here.
He does.
He was actually mentored in Chicago by apparently No ID, who was his mentor.
Right.
Was kind of a legend in Chicago. Of course, I wouldn't know that because I'm not from Chicago.
And he's very, again, that's why I think he's a good person. He was very vocal about that. He never
right.
hid the fact that he was really touched by that individual and you know,
yep.
where like some people might hide their influences mm-hmm. or, yeah.
And he essentially taught Kanye how to produce, you know, how to program at the age of 15. So he's been in this for a while, and then he was kind of grown into the Rockefeller, you know, Jay-Z's label there as a producer.
Yes. You know? Again, that Last Call song is great because he
basically tells the whole
basically
story.
Tells you what
yeah.
how he got to where he was,
yeah.
and that's when the because that song's long, so I've zoned out on it many
right.
of times.
Yeah.
And like the first time I listened to the album, I kind of missed it. And then like 10 spins later, I was like, oh, dude, he's talking this whole time. Like,
yeah.
And then I started listening. And so then I looked at like his old stuff and I'm like, oh, here's a Jay-Z song that he
right.
did that's huge
yeah.
and all that stuff. So,
and he's often credited as revitalizing Jay-Z's career, actually.
Yeah.
Because of the Blueprint album,
mm-hmm.
which had that H to the Izzo.
V to the Izzy.
Yeah. And he's also done producing work for Beanie Siegel and Freeway, Cam'ron. But those
then,
guys were all Rockefeller guys, I believe.
Yes. And then he took Common kind of under his
right, yeah.
guys and rebooted his entire career.
Another Chicagoan.
Right.
Chicagoan. Chicagalo.
Yeah, because, I mean, Common was really big in the underground world.
Mm-hmm.
But Kanye picked him up and said, let's put you into... And now he's like a... Now he's... I mean, he's... probably considered like a huge rapper now.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Kanye was like, he lifted his arm and he was like, right here,
right
this
in
area
here.
Not so much my armpit area, but over here.
That's
right
for
here
you.
This is for you.
That's for you, Kanye.
Does that look comfortable? Kind of an interesting thing about Common, if you're familiar with West Side Connection, Ice Cube, Dub
yeah.
C, Mac
yeah, 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 yeah.
There was, on their first album, they had a diss song. Like, it was like, they were trying to do this East Coast, West Coast, fuck you thing again,
yes.
you know? And
yes.
They had a little line in there for Common, because apparently Common had some...
There's a song on one of his, like, first albums or something that was, like, a direct hit at those guys.
Okay. It seemed to me like kind of a, you know, Common's kind of like this, he seems like a nice guy,
right.
you know, Midwestern.
Kind of ladies' man at
yeah,
times.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why would he even bother with any trouble like that, you know? but yeah, that was a real thing, and that happened. But
serious.
Apparently, they squashed the beef.
That's good.
It's been squashed.
For Biggie.
Yes. For Biggs.
And Tupac.
Biggs and Pac. Yeah, essentially, the whole Last Call song tells the whole story, you know, he shopped around a
couple demo tapes and stuff.
And,
yep.
And apparently one label, I don't remember what label it was like really interested. And then somebody talked like the CEO of the label into, hey, you don't want that guy.
Right.
He's trouble.
Right.
He's trouble. But actually the problem was that was early 2000s and people wanted like the gangster rap.
Right.
And he was not doing
that. He was not doing it.
Yeah. So they were like, if you don't have beef with West Side Connection, we don't want you.
You know? Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, well, I can make up beef.
Fake beef.
Fake beef. It's beef jerky. No, but then Damon Dash was basically like, well, if we don't sign him, someone else is gonna, you
going
know,
to,
so
right.
Give him a shot.
And
the world changed.
The rest
Taylor
is history.
Swift is fucked.
Taylor Swift.
And we are
be...
never, ever getting back together.
Wow. Yeah. That was a good reference right there. Well
that's
done.
Like, that's the only song.
That was for the kids. That was for the kids.
Yeah.
Well done.
Something I didn't know about the album is it leaked like 2 months before the album came out.
Really?
Yeah. So, and the original version had a song with Old Dirty Bastard on there.
Really?
Yeah. It was called Keep the Receipt. And then there was another song called The Good, Bad, and the Ugly with Consequence. And I think he's one of his good music
buddies.
Yeah.
His posse, part of his
posse.
His direct posse.
So he went and completely remastered, remixed the album, added verses, took songs off.
Really?
Yeah. Bravo, Kanye. Bravo.
Really?
But I'm really interested, because of that, I'm really interested to hear that whole original version of the album, just to hear the changes.
I wondered if there was something wrong with it, because I bought it. I bought the College Dropout back in the day when you bought CDs.
Right.
No, I bought it, and I bought the explicit version, because I don't want that crappy, you know, censored shit.
Fuck that.
Yeah, I want the shit in there.
Right.
I want my
put that shit in.
I want my shit in there. Yeah. So I got the one that has the parental advisory sticker on it, but the skit at the end of the first song blends in and becomes censored halfway through it.
Really?
Yep.
What the hell?
It's that when the guy comes, the comedian comes on, he's like, what in the fuck was that, Kanye? I told you to do something for the kids. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, he talks for a little bit more. And then all of a sudden, the swear words are omitted. I know he's saying them, but I can hear them being cut out. And I was like, did somebody screw this master up?
Wow.
And it was distributed?
That's quite
so
a fuck up there.
It would. And then there's that School Spirit song.
Yeah,
Alpha
I was just going
to
say. Yeah.
Omega Step.
Yeah.
Cap
I was going to say, why?
It's edited on my version.
Yeah.
But again, it says explicit on the CD.
Right.
So that makes sense now. Kanye was hurriedly trying to fix shit, and he probably got one of the edited tracks into the final master when he didn't mean to.
Right. I've always been curious to know why.
Why?
Out of that whole album, that song is...
is censored.
Yeah.
I think, I mean...
At first,
that makes
I was
sense.
Like, maybe he's just trying to get like colleges to play this, you know, fraternities
right.
I don't know. That's it's just an odd one.
That is really odd.
Yeah,
that makes sense now.
One thing we didn't talk about here was the song "Through the Wire."
Right.
For those unaware, on October 23rd, 02, 2002, Kanye Tilla was out driving at a late night after a late night recording session. This is when shit gets serious right here.
Get close to the mic.
He falls asleep at the wheel. I need some sound effects here.
Yeah.
Crash.
With like eerie music in the background.
Yeah. And he shattered his jaw. And finally, Kanye could not talk. Finally.
Finally.
Although this was this was way too, this was before all you know, him
before people didn't want him to talk.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately.
And then he obviously he had to have his jaw wired shut after that, and that's when he went in and recorded through the wire.
Yeah. An interesting situation that he capitalized on.
He did. Yeah.
Which again is so, you know, back to take a full circle kind of back to, is he a douche? No, I think he's extremely intelligent because he took that once in a lifetime opportunity of a really shitty situation and look at the positive that he spun out of that.
Right.
Like that's huge.
Absolutely.
That's huge.
Well, should we break?
We should break.
Break. For a Pearson salted nut roll.
Yes. I've been waiting. I'm so excited.
This is why nobody even wants to do my podcast, but they know that they're going to get a Pearson salted
nut roll out of the deal.
Yeah, so they're, you know.
Like, let me get on that.
Well, I guess. I got nothing going on.
There's like one other thing I wanted to talk about.
With Kanye?
Yeah, about this album. On that song with Common and Talib, Quali, which I do love that one. There's like a part where Quali's verse goes into like this talk box effect, and it always just rubs me the wrong way.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, that's probably one of my favorite songs on there, and I know exactly what you're talking
about. I love the beat. I love the hook. Get him high.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's right when he's saying, stuck to my arm like Nicorette. Like, I think that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like somewhere in there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, what was the choice with that?
Right. Like, why?
Why did you slip his normally audible verse into this weird talk box?
Mm-hmm.
Unless the story of the song is he's talking with a girl on the phone. And then he's like, you know, unless you bring a friend from my friend, his name, Quali. So then it's like, was that him getting on the phone? I don't know. And then Common's verse on there is terrible.
Yeah?
Like, I'd just rather have an instrumental at the end of that.
Really? I like it.
There's one part that just rubs me really wrong. Rappers is hard to find. Like, the remote.
Control.
Right. And there's like that huge pause. I'm like, I know why you did it, but I'm like, come on. I didn't like that part.
Mm-hmm.
And just... And now it just sticks in my head.
When I had Big Jess on the show, we were talking about rappers that repeat like the same line.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Kanye does this, I think, I counted at least two times on this album.
Mm-hmm.
I really wish I would have wrote them down. You know, it's one thing to say like, use two and two, like T-O-O, T-O, in the next line. I mean...
I'll let that one slide. I'll let, yeah. Because I've done it before too in my own, I mean...
Yeah, you're going a different direction with using like a word that's you're not rhyming a word. It's the same word, but you know it sounds the same. But yeah, in two instances that I found on this album, it's the exact same word. I don't know why he's doing it, Kanye. Just give me a call, man. I just want to know. I just want to know. I'll have you on the show.
Fill me in. Just let me know.
Pearson salted nut roll. What, you don't know what that is?
I will say some of my favorite Kanye lines are on the College Dropout.
Mm-hmm.
Mayonnaise color bends. I push miracle whips. And then on the one with Ludacris on the hook, I always had a PhD, a pretty huge dick. And again, the beat drop out, it's just perfect. Like that, to me, that's just the antithesis of arrogant hip hop.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to drop the whole beat out and say the word dick. Just like, you know what I mean? It's just boom. That's all you get out of it.
So obviously, you don't have peanut allergies.
I do not. Nope. Thankfully, or I wouldn't be able to enjoy that Pearson salted nut roll.
You'd be dead.
A good source of protein, right on the package.
All right. Just so you don't know, in case you don't know, peanuts are
protein. Although, aren't they like the worst nut for you, technically?
I don't know.
Like in the family of nuts, isn't?
I thought
like...
cashews are up there.
Oh yeah, you might be right. Almonds are like really good.
Okay. Yep. Well, in case you didn't know, in case you just decided to listen to this podcast and just
halfway
jump
through,
in.
Just right? Click
right. Yeah. Fuck this. I just want to get to the part where they eat the Pearson salted nut roll. You'd be surprised.
You could do a highlight reel at the end of like the year. You could just do the Pearson salted nut reel.
Nice.
Copywritten.
Nice.
You got it.
52. Just listen to these people eating and talking
eating
about
a Pearson salted
nut roll.
It was really good. Yeah. That nougat center is really
like,
good.
It's just made right here in St. Paul. Well, we're in Minneapolis, but made in the state.
Still local.
But again, we're here with Fingers of Common Labor, Background Noise Crew.
I appreciate you having
me. Yeah, yeah. You guys just released the Tales of the Troubadours.
Yes.
Right? I had... what's the other guy's name? Analyrical. That's his name. On a couple weeks ago, and he gave me a copy of the album.
Yep.
the last like week and a half, I still listen to CDs in my car. And it's been in pretty much nonstop.
Awesome.
So I get some very thorough listens, and I gotta say, I really like the album.
Thank you.
Really good. So you produced all the beats?
Yes.
Correct?
No collaborations on the music with any musicians or any other
instruments, things. Everything was all you.
Yes. There's awesome. No I was gonna say it's the first album in my canon that is sample free, but it is not. It's the second album that's completely sample free. The other projects I've been a part of have always been a weird hybrid, mm-hmm. where, you know, most of it, 80 to 90% of it is organic, completely created, and then every now and then I throw like a sample-based song in there, mm-hmm. or two or three, but this one is just completely no samples whatsoever.
And how did the release party go?
It was better than we thought, for sure. Well, I shouldn't say that. We had high hopes, and our expectations were not let down.
Okay, good.
It was very packed, lots of good energy.
Balls to butts?
Not quite that packed, but Hell's Kitchen is huge.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I remember playing shows at, like, Dinky Towner and stuff, and when you get just, like, 50 people in there, it's like, claustrophobic.
Right.
But, like, Hell's Kitchen is this big open area, and they have seating and tables, and, like, I mean, you'd probably have to get, like, 500 to 600 people in there to really feel like you're sweating.
Okay, so was Chef Gordon Ramsay there? Did he show up?
I didn't hear him yelling, so I'm guessing he wasn't there.
What the fuck is this?
Have you ever seen somebody get so passionate about food?
No, never, never.
And we wonder why we have obesity problems in this country. We're cursing about fucking food. But no, yeah, it was great. And we played with Cooley, who is like from a collective of people, I would call them, Breath of Life. And then they do music stuff under Breath of Life Audio. They do like clothing and stuff. But he's been our homeboy. We've done a couple shows with him. Mm. And then I was really excited because we got to play with Mike the Martyr. Which, in the Twin Cities scene, he's getting, like, a lot of good shine. I don't know if you go on Reddit ever.
I'm familiar with the site, but I don't.
Reddit's just a big, like, user platform where people submit links, and then it's voted, and then things that get voted the most get bubbled up to the top, and then they appear, like, in the front.
Okay.
So they do these things called Ask Me Anythings, and famous people go on Reddit live, and people can ask them questions, and they can try to answer them. Mm-hmm. Well, Slug did an AMA. Like 2 weeks ago, and somebody asked him who his favorite rapper was in the Twin Cities, and he said Mike the Martyr.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So Mike does his own beats and stuff, and he's like that true hip-hop, like sample bass, like kind of those lazy, funky drums, and like just very, I call them like soul food beats and
soul food
music. You know, it just feels good. It's just like that really hit-at-home hip-hop. Okay. And then with Guante, and Guante is like an activist and like a... He fights for people's rights and stuff. So, like, that was really humbling that he came out and helped out. But, yeah, it was awesome. We had a blast.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're originally from Utah, right?
Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay. Are you a Mormon?
No.
Why not? you get that a lot when people ask you that?
Oh, yeah.
You Mormon?
Are you Mormon? You Mormon boy? No, it's a very interesting religion, and I don't like to speak holier than thou, because I believe people make their own choices, and you're completely entitled to believe and think what you want
whether it's stupid or not.
Right. If you encroach on other people's rights and things, then we have a problem. But if you want to be in your own world where this exists, that's fine. You can do that. It's just a very interesting religion to talk about and study, because it was founded within written history. We have literal documentation of, like, everything that they claim occurred and has happened.
Unlike the Bible?
Well, there's written documentations of that, too, but that was 2,000 years ago, so the amount of incantations or cycles through other languages has been changed dramatically.
Right.
The Book of Mormon was, quote-unquote, written and founded, like, 200 years ago.
Okay.
Like, we're two generations removed from the founding of that religion.
Okay.
But it's the world's, like, fastest-growing religion or something, I think.
And Scientology is not?
I don't know. Actually, my source might be, I mean, my numbers might be outdated, but I know at one point, it was like the fastest growing religion in the world.
Okay.
And again, it was founded in modern time. The printing press existed. Like, none of these archaic things, you know what I mean?
So not a lot of translation was missed.
Yeah. Like, I mean, people, again, like two grandmas ago could have literally been there when it happened.
Right.
And that story could have been passed, and it's only two generations away now.
So, did you, growing up there, did you know a lot of Mormon?
Yeah. It's very predominant religion, obviously, within the state. And they don't run the state, but they do. Right. You know what I mean? Like, they're, I don't think they have, like, at least when I was growing up, I don't think they had people in office that were Mormon.
Okay.
Really. But, they do influence a lot of things. They have weird regulations on liquor laws,
right,
which spill over to the bars and the clubs, which squash local music and the ability to go out and just have a good time with friends. So it makes it kind of hard.
What I'm hearing is Utah will not be legalizing marijuana anytime soon.
I would imagine they're going to hold that fort down as long as
they'll
can.
They'll be the 50th state to approve it.
If that.
Allow it,
they might be their own little island that prevents it.
Yeah.
I mean, liquor sales in there is already weird as it is.
Yeah. What's that like?
If you don't go to a state-owned liquor store, which there's only like a few, all the beer is 3-2.
Oh,
all
really?
Of it. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's like watered-down beer everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to the bar, well, actually, it's not the bar. A bar can serve beer. A private club for members can serve alcohol.
Oh, wow.
So then you have to charge like an entrance fee to people that are not members, and then people have to be members. So it causes all these weird loopholes that people have to jump through. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel like the church and many probably of their political leaders feel like it's helping reducing drinking, but really it's just making people go to exorbitant means to drink.
Right.
I mean, people are going to drink.
Right. They'll find a way.
Right.
Yeah.
Life finds a way.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park.
So what brought you here?
The music scene was definitely a huge pull.
Mm-hmm.
The woman I was dating at the time was from here, and it felt like a good idea. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to go to college anymore. I'm going to move to Minnesota.
College dropout.
Boom. Kanye talking to me.
You're like, yeah, Kanye, you're right, man.
I'm going to drop out. I wouldn't even hide the fact that I was not influenced by Rhymesayers and their movement. I mean, I was in Salt Lake and in California for a little bit, and it spilled all the way over there. You know, I was listening to Atmosphere when I was in college, and it was the first rap that I got into. Idea and Abilities.
Good place to start.
And then I started kind of branching out into other realms, started listening to Def Jux and just finding this whole underground world that was out there, because all I had heard was NWA, and I really didn't like Dr. Dre because I love the band Parliament, and he samples Parliament all the time. So like in high school when people are like, oh, listen to Dr. Dre, I'm like, no, I'm just gonna go listen to Parliament.
Right.
So yeah, moved to Minnesota, and right before I moved, I started a group, a local rap group in Salt Lake. We called ourselves Synthesis. We put out our debut album like a month before I moved.
Wow.
So yeah, we didn't have a lot of time to do a lot there. And unfortunately, it's still on the internet.
Unfortunately?
Yeah, it's not very good.
Well, so that was your first project then?
Yes.
Well, at least first produced or recorded.
Yes, yeah. Because, right. I mean, I was in a band in high school, and we have two albums out, but they're not available anywhere. We made them in our garage and with some other people and stuff like that. But yeah, it was the first thing I did from the ground up.
I'd say usually people aren't proud of their first release.
No.
Unless, of course, you're Kanye.
Well, see, again, that's not his first, though. He had been doing beats beforehand, and I'm sure if you went into the underbelly of the Chicago hip-hop world, you'd hear some really crappy beats by Kanye, I'm sure.
Very true.
So,
very true.
Unfortunately, it's not in the limelight,
Like Synthesis is.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're just blowing up, so. Yeah, it's not very
good.
So
that was hip-hop? That was, were you producing on that one, too?
Yeah, we called it a hip-hopra. It was a concept album telling the story of a guy's life, but it was very influenced by, I would say, like operas and show tunes, where each character had a motif.
Okay.
Like Peter and the Rabbit.
Okay.
When you'd hear the oboe, oh, you know, the cat is showing up.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Right.
So the whole thing was this conceptual piece, which was way too ambitious to do for like a debut album, but why not?
Yeah.
You know, we're shooting for the stars, buddy.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was this crazy thing, and Faust was the rapper, and I made the beats.
Okay.
And I rapped a little bit on the first album, but I quickly realized that my rapping was not really that good,
okay,
so I shouldn't do it very much.
Right.
But then I moved, so then I was in the Twin Cities and met up with Egypto Knuckles via the now famous DU Nation boards.
Right.
Yep. Nice. And I can remember I posted Synthesis on there, and I think Fucky just,
is that real?
Just laying it into me.
Yeah.
Do you remember? That was a user.
There were so many. I mean,
well, yeah.
I think everyone that
ever created Twin Cities Music had at least one username.
At least
on there.
One, yeah. And you had a moniker where you could fuck with other people.
Yeah. Wasn't David Hasselhoff like somebody's like alias? I swear he was on the post sometimes.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
that sounds familiar.
DU Nation.
Yeah. That was a good time.
Yeah, so then I met Ali, and then I've been doing Background Noise Crew, kind of that. I've done a lot. I've done way too many projects, actually. I've done too many projects to not be doing this for a living.
I see.
Yeah.
So then what time did the Green Sketch project come about?
Well, that came out of, again, I met with Ali. And I told him about this really weird idea I had for like a mixtape, which was the first thing I attempted when I was in the Twin Cities, and I called it the Mixed Up Tape. I took this guitar riff and this chord progression, and then I built a beat, and then I sampled myself and built another beat, and then I sampled myself again and built a third beat. And I did this 5-6 times. Mm-hmm. So then I had 6 beats that were basically based all around the same thing, and they sonically sounded different. And then I took all the individual parts and exported them out as individual waves, and I sent them out as zip files to producers that I met in the Twin Cities, and I asked people to make beats. And then I asked as many rappers who would listen to me to record a song with me to it. And the trick was, I didn't tell anybody if a beat was already used. So there's actually the final version, there's repeats where a beat was used once, but then it was used again by another rapper.
Right.
And the thing I was trying to play with is almost like this: how much does the rapper actually influence what happens sonically and how the song turns out? You know, if the beat is the best and the rapper is the worst, do you still like the song?
Right.
Because the beat trumps the rapping,
right.
Or does the rapping trump the beat, right. Or where does it go from there? So like some guys did some really crazy shit, like Christoph Crane. He wanted me to take 3 beats that he really liked and like smash them all together.
Right.
So he was like orchestrating his instrumental. And then other rappers just came over and they literally, like, they didn't ask me to change the sequence. They didn't ask me to change anything. They just, they wrote to that beat the way it was.
That's a crazy concept.
Yeah. So it was really weird. And we got good press. City Pages said it was worth like a second volume. I was like getting pretty juiced on myself, and we were really cool about it. And that's how I met TQD.
Okay.
And so then TQD and I started making songs for his solo album, Not Yet, his first one. And I did 2 beats on there. And TQD was getting pretty good. I guess people were telling him that they liked his album, but they specifically were telling him, I really like this one song that you did with this beat, and it was one of my beats.
Okay.
So then he was like, maybe we should just try to do some more stuff. So then we started experimenting, and we made like 20 songs at one point. And they were all like TQD solo with mostly just me doing production, not doing much else vocally. But then we started playing around with the idea of, like, what if we were a duo? So then I started adding my own verses to some existing TQD skeletons that we had.
Without his permission.
Just stomping all over his idea.
This verse sucked. I just went ahead and added
I just went name. Ahead and did my verse instead, because what you said was not good. Because I'm arrogant like that. So we made these songs and started turning some of them into duo tracks. And then we said, you know what? We better announce ourselves as a duo. And essentially, we're the first group or release within the Background Noise Crew umbrella.
Yeah.
And I met all the Background Noise Crew guys through the Mixed Up Tape.
Okay.
All of them. So
who was all on that Mixed Up Tape?
Capacity, Christoph Crane, Tri-D, TQD, Frugalus, or I think he went by Blackjack Armstrong on that one.
Okay.
Analyrical, GWMC. Who else was on there? Catra K did a beat. I'm trying to remember all the guys. There's a lot. I actually have a copy. But anyways,
I vaguely remember this. Maybe talking about it on the You know what? I have that.
Masta I, Trauma got on City Pages did a top 50 songs of the year, and Trauma got picked as one of the top 50 for the song on there.
Hater Dave
did some beats. I mean, it was I wish the production would have been met with better reception, because a lot of producers didn't really want to play with what I was trying to do. Oracle Uno did something. RDM,
okay,
he did one. Status Rain again from Background Noise. Now, so
shout out to Hater Dave, by the way.
Definitely shout out to Hater Dave. But I didn't a lot of producers didn't get back to me. Right. Egypto Knuckles made like 13 beats or something crazy, and then Hater Dave made a couple, and then Catcher K made a couple, and we ended up using them as instrumentals because nobody rapped on them, even though they were in the pool. But I was like, "That's cool, you guys did stuff, so let's put them on there."
Right?
Yeah,
that's cool.
So then, I mean, Mixed Up Tape came, and then Green Sketch kind of grew out of that, and then Background Noise kind of grew out of that whole thing where we're like, we should be a crew together. But through the whole thing, I never stopped making music with Synthesis or producing here and there.
So Long For Now.
So Long For Now.
The EP.
The EP.
So at what point did the, what was the compilation album that Background Noise Crew did?
Everybody Does This.
Everybody Does This.
Volume one. Right. Yeah. That one stemmed from the fact that we were a crew and we wanted to make a statement that we were a crew. And it's very, I would say, famous and or cliche of these crews to do these releases and number them and do them in some sort of fashion like that. Sad Clown, Bad Dub with Atmosphere, False Hopes with Doomtree. Other camps do it, the boot camp click, you know, on Duck Down Records and stuff
Serial
like that.
Serial MCs. Serial. Volume 1,
Serial
two,
MCs,
three.
Yep, which I got over there somewhere. Nice. Yeah, so, I mean, it was, one, we needed to make a statement as a crew that you know, we're here and we'll do crew stuff too, but at the same time, a lot of us had like songs that were just kind of spilling over,
And they needed a home.
Yeah, and the one that really I would say spearheaded it was I love Blood Sugar Sex Magic by the Chili Peppers, and there's a song called Funky Monks which has this just driving guitar riff that I loved, and the verses are this call and respond where Anthony Kiedis sings something and then he sings it again in like the talk box voice. And I love that song and I love that guitar riff. And the bass is just one note, boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, this is a hip hop song. Mm-hmm. Like it should be a hip hop song.
Right.
So I replayed the guitar and I put these huge kicks with shakers and hand claps and foot stomps. And then just sang one of the verses and repeated it. And then I said, everybody in the crew needs to rap on this. Everybody. So I gave everybody 16 bars. It's like a 7-minute song or something ridiculous, right?
Right.
But it bangs, and we loved it. Like, everyone in the crew loved it. People that we showed it to loved it. So then it was like, maybe we should do some more crew songs. So then we started playing with it, and then we're like, what are we going to do with them? So we put EDT Volume 1 out and kind of, again, tried to say, hey, we're a crew now. Here's something for you that's crew-related.
And now there's a volume 2, right?
Yes, we did EDT volume 2, or Everybody Does This volume 2, just recently, last year.
Okay.
About 5 or 6 months ago. I will make sure you hear it.
I would love to hear it. Yep. I would love for you to make sure that I do hear it.
It is way more solid than Everybody Does This volume 1. Mm-hmm. The biggest, I guess, the fallback that we all, and I think we would all agree that it didn't have, was it didn't have as many crew songs.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one song that actually contains every member of Background Noise Crew.
Okay.
Where EDT Volume 1 had two, I think actually three songs that contained everybody. So it's not so much as a crew effort, but there are some interesting pairings on there. And then Common Labor, it was like our announcement to the world, like, hey, we're a duo too.
Right.
And things like that. And yeah, it's been well received. We're getting played on CMJ charts and stuff with it, so we're pretty proud of it.
Country music jams.
Country music jams. So yeah, we're pretty excited about it. We actually fell off the CMJ charts a little while ago, and then we re-entered.
Nice.
So we're pretty proud of that. Yeah. So yeah, it's very cool. We had a good party.
I just to give you some more feedback on the album. So you rap and sing on the album.
Yes.
Right. And I think, does Analyrical sing with you, or does he kind of harmonize with you, or were you the basis of the singing part?
It depends on the song, which is I think kind of the magic of the album. The song Learning, which is the more down-tempo, slower, a little bit somber, sadder song. It's Analyrical all by himself, and I didn't actually help him sing it or tell him how to
is
sing it
at all. Is that the one about I Need to Learn to Be a Better Boyfriend one?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Awesome. Good stuff.
So that's just him, and I didn't... the Common Labor recording sessions were very collaborative. Mm-hmm. I would be playing something, and he'd go, I don't like that. Yeah. So then I'd start doing something different to try to channel whatever energy zone he's in. But that one, he just... That was just all him. Okay. I didn't say, hey, sing it like this. Where there's other songs where, like, I would try to coach or say, hey, I'm hearing it like this. Let's do it like this. And vice versa, he would say the same thing to me.
After a good, solid fight, fist fight.
Just duking it out.
All right, you win.
For most of the time, if it's singing, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not singing, it's either both of us or Colin.
Right.
Yeah. except for learning, which is the exception to the rule.
Now, the track that's really dedicated to Idea.
Yes.
The more I listen, the more I'm like, okay, that's analytical, that's Fingas, you know.
Yeah.
Did you actually have a relationship with Idea like he did, or what was your...
So, for Here For You, Here For You 2 is the name of that song, mm-hmm. and Colin, analytical, is the first rapper okay. to go, and then I'm the second rapper to go, but then the bridge, or the ending part, is us trading, so we keep answering each other and going back and okay. forth, so it's very back and forth. Mikey was... When I moved to the Twin Cities, I had made a little personal goal with myself. I said, I'm going to work with somebody from Rhymesayers within a year or two, I think I said. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'd go to Fifth Element, and I'd hang around, and I got Iself's number at one point mm-hmm. and tried to throw him some beats, but I just wasn't really good at them yet, or they really probably weren't even his style, honestly.
Right.
I was making some weird stuff. I still do, but... So I was really just trying to find my niche, and I met Mikey at a show... And just first, I was just, dude, you're so awesome. Like, Idea and Abilities is like my shit. And right. I was just the groveling fan that just literally couldn't say anything to him. You know what I mean? It was just right. like, I mean, I've been listening to your album for years, man. And it's so good. And like, you blow my mind and shit like yeah. that. And he was, to his credit, he was just such a down to earth guy. He's like, that's awesome, man. You know, he wasn't ever making me feel like I was like an idiot.
Right.
Like, so leave then,
me alone. I get it.
Right.
I'm awesome.
So right. then he started playing in this rock band, Carbon Carousel,
right.
and I started helping him promote, and I was part of Carbon Carousel and Crush Kill Recordings' very, very early street team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd spend very late nights. I would go out and flyer the U of M campus
mm-hmm.
for Crush Kill and for Carbon Carousel and Absorber. But anyway, so I was doing stuff for Absorber and Carbon Carousel, and I got to know Mike. I go drink with him at Glockenspiel. I got to know him more as like a person, not so much as like the artist that I just envied.
Right.
And then Synthesis put out our third full length. And I said, Mike, do you want to rap on a song with us? And he was like, sure, show me some beats. So I showed him a bunch of beats, and then he rapped on this one song. And it was awesome. It was like, I was like, yes, I did it. You know, it was like, it took me 2 years, I think, to work with a Rhymesayer guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was totally awesome about it. Rapped on it. Nice. He did it in two takes, but the only reason he did it in two takes is because the first tape, I fucked it up.
Oh, yeah?
So it's not his fault. Yeah. But yeah, and I started following around Face Candy and just trying to help him out like in any way I could. I'd go to Face Candy shows. I'd promote Face Candy shows, promote Carbon Carousel shows, because he was doing all this wild and crazy shit, and people were not accepting it for the most part.
Right.
A lot of people, I mean, I saw him get booed. I saw him, you know, just, but he was doing, I thought it was really experimental and really right. awesome stuff.
Yep.
To go out there and just make it up, yeah. that's scary.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
like just going out there and not really knowing what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's parts of Face Candy shows where you're like, yeah, this is dragging. But then when they click in and it would just be that good, mm-hmm. you would be like, wow, I'm so glad I got to see that, because
right.
I can't ever show it to anybody else. You know,
yeah.
I can't ever tell you about the time we played like a birthday party mm-hmm. for somebody and I saw Mikey and Chris just get into it, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
When
the Face Candy concept is just...
That was wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it was pretty... That's why I had to go to Face Candy shows, because mm-hmm. it was like, when they do something awesome, I'm going to mm-hmm. be there, and I'm going to see it.
Not going to miss it.
Yeah. So, right. And then that song, we wrote that song early. That was one of the first songs we did as Common Labor, and it was mm-hmm. right after his wake, actually.
Okay.
And his wake was in late October, and my wife was out of town for the weekend, and I called Colin up. I said, come over, let's make some tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So he came over, and we actually recorded six songs in that first night. That's the, in our bio, it says it was created in a 48-hour marathon recording
That's
session.
That's a lie.
That was...
It's a lie.
I'm lying to you right now. We made six songs
right.
in that first 48 hours.
Okay.
He came over, we stayed up all night, we stayed up all day. We went to sleep for a little bit. We stayed up some more. We went to Isid's for like an hour. And then we came back and we just kept recording.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kept making stuff. And
hey, so you went to Isid's, I think, and Lyrical said it was a Halloween party.
Yeah.
Was Isid dressed as a hologram werewolf?
Werewolf? I couldn't see.
Because it was a hologram.
It was a hologram.
Anyways, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. And so, and that was one of the ones, that's one of the most original Common Labor recordings. The other ones were... We did a little single, just a digital one called mm-hmm. No and the Box. It's on Bandcamp and things like that. That was
okay.
two other songs that came out of it. And then there's two other ones, three other ones that are out there that we haven't actually like done anything with yet.
Okay.
And we might not. One of them was called Two Step. It was really dope at the time. we don't think it's as dope anymore.
Yeah. Is it a dance song?
It's not like a dance, but we were kind of making fun of the dance, right. But at the same time referencing like a dance type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. We used to play it live, but okay. We don't anymore.
All right. Now, and you guys did a song on one of the Big Jess honorable mentions?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that three or four?
Four.
Four? Okay.
That was Helter Skelter. Big Jess was awesome and asked Background Noise Crew to do one on volume one, mm-hmm. or volume two. We got on volume two.
Okay.
And when we were there, I was like, Jess, dude, I love your production. I mean, that went full circle for us. Big Jess and the Unknown Prophets, they played the Everybody Does This volume two release party.
Okay.
When I moved to Minnesota, Big Jess and the Unknown Prophets was like one of the, why do I keep calling them Big Jess and the Unknown Prophets? The UPs were like one of the first groups I went to see.
Right.
When I was in
always
the Twins.
Always put on a kick-ass
Yeah,
show.
They were always, awesome. Yeah. And I worked with Madsen for like a year at Wake Park Elementary, oddly enough.
Okay.
But yeah, so it was so cool to play a show with those guys, mm-hmm. when I was going to them 7 years ago and whatnot. Right. But I was like, Jess, dude, I love your production. I would love to take a stab at doing something for honorable mention. And he was totally gentleman about it. He's like, yeah, no problem.
Right.
So then volume three came and went, and I kind of pestered him once. I sent him like an email or something. I was like, hey, you got another beat for me? If you have beats, let me know. I'll still try to do it. Mm-hmm. So then like 2 or 3 weeks before honorable mention four was dropping, he sent me an email with like 7 beats in it. He's like, sorry, this took me forever. So I combed through them and I found the one I liked, and I was like, I'll take this one. I'll record something. I don't know if I can get together with you, because he recorded most of them himself.
Right.
But I was like, I'll do it at my house and I'll get it to you. So I wrote a version of the song and I recorded it. I was like, this is horrible. And when I write solo songs, it's often like that. It goes through 5 or 6 incantations before I'm like settled on it, you know. Yeah. So I did one take through it, and I was like, yeah, this isn't very good. And then I tried this like storytelling angle, and I was like, yeah, it's better, but I really think it needs like more, like the hook should have 2 people or something like that or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Colin was coming over to do some common labor practicing and stuff, and I was like, dude, I have this beat from Big Jess for honorable mention volume four. Mm-hmm. If we can get to it by like Monday. And it was like Saturday. I was mm-hmm. like, if we can get it to him by Monday, he'll put it on honorable mention four.
Okay.
So we just went to town. And so then it turned into a common labor song instead of just me. But yeah, it was fun.
Cool.
Writing about buses.
It's a good way it came together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? I wanted to ask you, the hidden track on the album, on the common labor album.
Yes.
What is that called?
Oh, it's called No Man's Land.
No Man's Land, okay.
No Man's Land.
What came about? Why is there the hidden song? And
No Man's Land was, so the Burn Down the Old School music video, mm-hmm. we actually had help from Kansas State University.
Okay.
Patrick Monroe, he was awesome. He shot it for us. And then one of the teachers, he might be the director, his name's Madison. I don't actually know his last name, but at Kansas State University. Colin's mom, oddly enough, works with the college and stuff, and she choreographed this. So we went down to Kansas State University, played a show, which was smashingly successful, and then we shot a music video with these guys. Mm-hmm. But the catch was, I had to write them music that he could use in a teaching environment for like a film class or something like that.
Okay.
And he said he only gave me, he said, write a song, and No Man's Land is the inspiration. So we took it upon ourselves. I made the instrumental, and then Colin and I wrote all the words and stuff, and we recorded it with Bob Lindbergh at Grave Bomb Studios, mm-hmm. and I gave that to them, basically.
Okay.
But I gave them the instrumental and the audio. I don't know what they're doing with it, frankly, but I loved the song so much, and when it was time to press up the record, the track listing was already done. There was no way to like insert it on there,
right.
But I love secret songs, so
yeah, I agree.
But I also don't like secret songs you have to forward to.
Okay.
Like,
at the end of the last track.
Yeah, so you have to, like, fast forward to, like, 10 minutes.
Right.
Like, that's annoying.
Yeah. What about if you have to rewind it from track one?
Right. Stuff like this. These tricks. But I do love it at the same time. But yeah. I wanted to make it convenient. So if people do like the song, they can just skip to
right.
it.
Right.
So it's on there. And it's really cool because it just fits in what Common Labor is about for me.
Yeah.
It's very, we're one part, like, improv. And we're one part, I would say, like, organic hip-hop at the mm-hmm. same time. Because Colin writes most of the words on the spot, mm-hmm. like, while I'm making the beat. And then we'll write words together. And the mm-hmm. same thing with the beats. I usually don't make them, like, ahead of time and then, like, give it to Colin. And then he gets to mull over it for an hour or two.
Right.
It's like, I'm making it and he's doing it at the same time.
Yeah.
So, No Man's Land was kind of that, but actually in a different light, because the main instrument, the loop that's recorded in there, those like really like that high pitched finger piano sound. Mm-hmm. I recorded it into my cell phone at a thrift shop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just like
iPhone.
Yep.
iPhone.
Yep.
Apple plug.
Just I was shopping, hanging out with the wife on the weekend, and we were at this thrift shop, and there's this African instrument
thrift
thumb
shop.
Piano. Yep. Oh, Macklemore plug. And I was playing it, and I was like, I love this thing. This is so cool. I can't wait to get this home and play around with it. And I flipped it over, and the price tag said like $35. I'm like, well, I'm not bringing this home. I'm like,
that's not a thrift shop.
It's like an entire week's worth of food. I'm not going to do that. So I just put the phone out, and I just started playing it. And then I sampled it and fixed it and did it over.
Oh,
so
sweet.
The actual song was created in like an improv moment of, I would say, inspiration. So, yeah. It was very cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
You guys are continuing to do the common labor deal.
Yes.
Will there be a Fingas solo album at any time? Or
I did a digital one, kind of. It's funny. I called it Broken Glass. And it's actually over a period of like 6 years.
Okay.
Synthesis released a second album. We called it Free Cognition. Mm-hmm. I had 5 solo songs that I had been working on. Mm-hmm. And then I was working on a solo album for Faust of Synthesis. And then he had like 13 songs. And,
is he still in Salt Lake City?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he had 13 songs to my beats. Mm-hmm. And then I had 5 solo songs without him. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and it was going to be a Faust solo album, and he was going to do his own thing because we didn't live together anymore.
Right.
But he's like, people are actually liking Synthesis. Maybe we shouldn't change it. We should put out a Synthesis album. So then I took my 5 solo songs and added it to the Synthesis pool. And then we had an 18 track Synthesis album. So,
which none of them are actually the two of you together?
There are a couple, actually.
Oh, there
so
are.
Then, yeah,
okay.
we hybrided a few of them and made them duo tracks. But so then we put out that Synthesis album. So that was my first attempt at a solo album that got engulfed by the Synthesis album.
Okay.
And then I've always wrote songs here and there. I did a cover of Here For You, which is like my favorite idea song
or
ever.
For you. What album is that?
Oliver Hart, The Many Faces of Oliver Hart.
Okay.
I did a cover of that on Everybody Does This, Volume 1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've done some rap verses on other people's stuff, TKD and Green Sketch. And, I mean, I've done things, but I've never written a whole lot of material on my own, but I always am writing material on my own.
Right.
So I had some solo songs kicking around, and just last year, like in March, it's on the BNC Bandcamp, bncmusic.bandcamp.com. It's called Broken Glass. It is a 5 to 6 year snapshot of just songs that were for projects that weren't projects that turned into nothing. And yeah, so there is some solo Fingas material out there. And then I had to do a solo song for EDT Volume 2 even. But solo is weird for me because I can never walk the line between, do I like rap music? Do I want to play my guitar? Do I want to join like a rock band?
Right.
Do I want to just make instrumentals? Yeah. I can't ever make up my mind. And writing lyrics for me is really hard because, like I said, I'll write them, change the whole thing.
Yeah.
Don't like it. Yeah.
So that's maybe every Fingas song will be different because of that.
And it is. I did one when I launched my website, jasonsbasement.net, I did a little sampler and I put a blues song on there called Take Control. And it's very blues. I don't rap. One bar.
Right.
I sing for the whole thing, and it's very blues-driven electric guitar and like kind of muddy drums and stuff. So, yeah, I am never standing in one place for too long, which is probably why I'm not extremely successful, because it's hard to track, you know, when you're changing all the time. It's, and like Synthesis, we've had success with our albums, but they're different. Every single one is like really related to the
previous one.
Right. And it's a good thing, and that's why I like it.
Yeah.
But it's also a bad thing. And same with this common labor. I mean, people are already having trouble telling me what it sounds like because they're not really 100% sure.
That was exactly before I did the Egypto Knuckles interview last week. You know, I was like, I hadn't listened to the album yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to at least listen to it once. And so I did. And then he asked me, what do I think of it? And I was like, I couldn't even tell you what does it sound like?
Right.
You know, because it's got guitars, it's got singing, it's got, your production is very unique and like, it's not completely sophisticated in that it drowns out the song, the lyrics, you know what I mean?
Right.
Everything complements itself, and I couldn't even tell you, you know? It's definitely, there's a lot of feel-good stuff about it.
Yeah.
Nothing, even like the songs that are the subject matter is a little bit darker. Like the idea song, it's a, mm-hmm. it's a bit sad. The song where Analytical is talking about the
relationships and this girl.
It's still like, it's very well put together. It's honestly one of the better local albums I've heard in a long time.
I appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and I look forward to another one. You got to do another one.
We do.
Yeah.
I mean,
no pressure.
That's the problem with being creative, though, is the moment. I mean, that album's like a year old to us.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been working on those songs for so long, and Colin and I have been talking about them. And
yeah.
I mean, we had 18 songs at one point, and we combed it down to those 10. And
that's good. And even in the Lunatics days, we'd get into arguments about, like, I don't want a fucking 18-song album.
Right.
And just about every release is, like, 15 to 20.
And it's hard because you have to be honest with yourself. You have to say, not everything I make is the shit.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is shit.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Literally, some of it is bad.
And you know, in the Lunatics days, I've never claimed to be, like, I'm a fucking awesome lyricist. You know what I mean? I honestly have written one awesome song that I really like. You know what I mean? The other ones are just tolerable, and I just kind of went along with that. You know, I just want to see more from you guys, and
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I am really, really, really proud of it too.
Good.
I didn't feel like we sacrificed anything to get it to be the way it was or the way it turned out. And I think one of the things that worked for us is we didn't say what we were or announce it even. Mm-hmm. So there was no outside pressure. So Background Noise Crew would get together and they'd say, we were calling ourselves the Troubadours for the longest time, which is why we called the album Tales of the Troubadours, because it's literally our story of creating all of these things that we did. And everyone would say, so what's going on? I'm like, well, we recorded 3 more songs. And that's that. We're like, we're not talking about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And people are like, well, when's the album coming out? I'm like, I don't know if we're doing an album.
Right.
You know, we were talking about doing like 3 separate little EPs and make them digital and do all this stuff. And then we talked about doing, man, we had some wild ideas, doing like secret albums that we were going to like hand to hand, and we were going to do limited pressings of them and try to make them like a big secret deal.
Right.
We were doing all this crazy shit.
Yeah.
But that's allowed us to, because we didn't put any deadlines.
Yeah.
We weren't saying what we were trying to do.
Right.
We didn't say like, you know, okay, we're going to come out in March. So then we had to hurry up and try to get stuff done.
Yeah.
It was like,
and rush it.
Yeah, no, we made 18 songs, and then it was like, okay, which one of these suck?
Mm-hmm.
And then once we figured that out, we're like, okay, what order do these go in?
Right.
Okay. Should we change that one? Like, it's just like, we had time. We weren't ever being stressed.
That's
so
good. That's good. And was everything recorded here?
Yeah, right here.
Nice.
Except for the secret song.
Right.
We did that one with Bob at Grave Bomb Studios.
Bomb, 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 bomb,
bomb, bomb. What? I can't say bomb on a plane anymore?
So, okay, so you got your own website, jasonsbasement.net, and so you used to do your own podcast.
I did.
What happened with that?
Jason's Basement, the podcast. Well, I did it with Frugalus McSpiteful,
mm-hmm.
A.K.A. Blackjack Armstrong, A.K.A. Mm-hmm. Tone Crusher Smith, A.K.A. Handy Handsome. I think that's all he's got. We used to do it right here in the basement, Jason's Basement. We started weekly, and we do it on Thursdays. Then I got a little crazy, so then we went to bi-weekly, and bi-weekly was working pretty good for a while. We would do it with just us. Occasionally we'd have guests. I never interviewed people. We didn't have famous people on except for Mally. We had Mally on twice.
Nice.
And one of those podcasts went almost to the 2-hour mark. We had a segment called Like It and Smite It. So it was like, you know, you would say something and I would guess whether you liked it or smited it. And then I had sound effects that I would trigger like it, smite it, and like all these weird stuff. And then I even had a theme song for Like It or Smite It that I made. And we would review albums. And then we would give them ratings based on downy sheets on how fresh it was, because we were in the basement, so we were going off the basement mentality.
Nice.
We had a lot of fun. We did like, I think we did like 30 of them.
Okay. So what else is at jasonsbasement.net?
You can see I do a blog there occasionally. It's got a pretty lapse in content. I've just picked it back up again a little bit more. I had a personal blog for a while. But again, lapse in content.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really love video games, and I tried to band up with a couple of my friends to kind of blog and talk about video games. But again, all things sometimes come to an end. So yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right now it's just kind of like a news feed of things I'm doing, which is pretty much dominated by Common Labor right now. So I spotlighted every artist that played at the Common Release show. It's got all the music on there. So basically, if I made it, you can get to it through jasonsbasement.net. Right. So I have stuff with Capacity linked on there. Status
it's
Rain.
It's a good hub.
Yes.
I'm
Analytical.
Live right now.
Oh, you're on it right now. Yeah. Synthesis, our entire discography is accessible through there pretty much, which, again, is staggering. We have 4 albums and an EP. We released a new album like 7 or 8 months ago, which, again, is not a rap album. I wouldn't call it that. It's like the Black Keys, Jack White meets Rage Against the Machine, maybe? I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. So I played guitar on everything on
Do
that
you
one.
Scream?
No, but almost. Yeah.
Near Scream.
Near Scream.
Okay.
The Near Scream. And then Common Labor is on there.
If you haven't heard the Common Labor album, buy it, listen to it, and then you break down, actually, do you go through each song on here?
I was going to at one point, so up to the release, I just did a couple, but I'm still thinking I'll continue and talk a little bit more about each one.
Okay.
Because most of them...
That'd be interesting, especially now that I've listened to it, you know, 25 times, it really... You know, you get a more understanding from the artist's perspective.
Totally. I loved that when I was... I mean, that's why it's kind of unfortunate because printing a lyric book is kind of hard.
Right.
It costs more.
Yeah.
And especially in an industry where we know we're really not going to make a lot of money from our CDs. We're going to make money from playing shows, going out and seeing people. You can... When you sell CDs on the road and stuff, you definitely... But the days of selling, you know... billions of albums are far and few between
right.
now. So
yeah.
I loved that in a booklet, you know, when you get like a little backstory or and they would talk about what was happening and things like that. So yeah, I like profiling. It's a little vain, but I like profiling my own songs and things like that. Yeah. Because some of those songs were created in very interesting circumstances.
Right. Cool. Well, thanks for being on the show, man. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming by.
Yeah.
I have a blast. I love talking about whatever.
I love to talk about whatever, too.
Yeah, see, it's
weird.
Really good.
Yeah. You know, I got to give a shout-out to my friends, my Mankato crew, Fuzz Talk
Fuzz
Radio.
Talk, yeah.
You're familiar with the Fuzz Talk?
I'm very familiar with Fuzz Talk.
And Nuts at the Fuzz Talk.
At the Fuzz Talk. Yeah, no, definitely. I love Fuzz Talk Radio. And Fuzz Talk Radio has been really nice to Common Labor, so.
Good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I talk to Nuts frequently, and he's been putting some of the clips of the my podcast on the...
Awesome.
In rotation.
Awesome.
So I appreciate that. He's a good guy.
Very.
Gotta love him.
Yep.
But thanks for being on the show. So jasonsbasement.net, check it out.
Yep.
Backgroundnoisecrew.com.
Right? Yep. And then the other big ones are Bandcamp. So, but you can get to Bandcamp through both of those other websites.
Through the hub.
Through the hubs.
The hubs.
Yep.
And thankyourob.com, which is a hub.
A hub. Yep.
It's a whole lot of hub. Stuff.
Right.
Thankyourob.com. Check it out. You can always go to that hub, and you can frequent some of my other pleasures.
I would like to see some Thank You Rob designs on some local releases and stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
You know, there's a guy I know that is actually working on a website for Big Jess. But whatever, I'm not gonna like blow any horns here,
right?
But that is happening, and he probably may or may not want me to talk about it yet.
Maybe.
So I'm just about this guy that's working on the website for him. So,
well, you know, the internet is a scary place. You don't want to leak identities,
right?
And things like
that.
Yeah,
then people's lives are in danger, and they have kids and animals, you know. But yeah, go there. I define design as my graphic design. I also do the other podcast, Some People's Kids, which needs to be updated. Chuck, what the fuck?
Talking to you directly.
Yeah, Jesus.
Name drop.
And I also do some t-shirt designs, which I've been lacking on. I need to do better stuff than what I have on there, but that's there. But yeah, check it out. Thankyourob.com. Listen to some past episodes. Fingas, thank you for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
Until we meet again.
Until we meet again.
Goodbye.
Grown ass kid.
Bye.
Swear I should be locked up for stupid shit that I did, but I'm a champion, so I turn tragedy to triumph. Make music that's fire, spit my soul through the wire. You know what I'm saying? When the doctor told me I was gonna have to have a plate in my chin, I said, dog, don't you realize I'll never make it on a plane now? It's bad enough I got all this jewelry on. She can't be serious, man.